As girls, we grow up having beauty defined for us. We're taught what pretty looks like in the shape of a perfect body. Beauty is curvy in just the right places and slender in the rest. Long legs, toned muscles, hair only on the head. The nose upturned, but not too much. Eyes, preferably blue, are round and with just enough space between them. The skin is almost always some shade of white, and on and on. It's an impossible beauty standard for most of us, and yet most of us spend our lives trying to achieve it. Anorexia, bulimia, waxing, tanning, dyeing, bleaching, surgery, Botox, dieting, excessive exercise will do almost anything to be beautiful. And still, we don't arrive, because it's made up, an ideal created by an industry that airbrushes and photoshops, shrinks and enlarges, lightens and digitizes. Amber Vittoria is out to change that, to upset and redefine our ridiculous beauty standards, to tell the narrative that, in Amber's words, it's okay to be who you are. You don't have to fit into any particular box or sphere or line that other people say you have to. There is not one definition of beauty. As long as you stay true to yourself, that is the most important thing you can do. Amber is an illustrator who makes images of women all shapes and sizes. Hairy and big, small and wide, arms too long, legs too short. Women who are beautiful simply because they are women. Amber's work has appeared on the cover of numerous publications, including the New York Times Magazine. She's partnered with big names like Condé Nast, Man Repeller, and Gucci, and she sells her art all over the world. All from taking a stand for what she believes in, resisting what she doesn't, and making art that is honest to who she is. Hi, I'm Daphne Cohn, and you're listening to the Creativity Habit Podcast, the practice behind the art and the story behind the artist. Today's guest is illustrator Amber Vittoria. In this conversation, some of the things that we talk about are how to hustle and get your art out there, even when no one's heard of you or knows your work, the best practices to grow your Instagram following, disrupting a broken system, and how to make your own success and create your own career. May it inspire you to make your thing and change your world. Hello, Amber. Welcome to the Creativity Habit Podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I typically start with childhood and how creativity shows up for you. One of the things that you said, so I actually want to use a quote of something that you said and start there, because I think it was in an interview you did where you shared your earliest creative memory. And this is what you said. It was the second grade and we were drawing our self-portraits with crayon. The boy across from me stated, "Why do you make the arms and legs so long? That's wrong, you know." I looked down at my masterpiece and back up at him and said, "That is how I see myself." So that you shared that as your earliest creative memory, and I'm wondering why that memory sticks out for you.
Yeah, so I actually, it's funny because I was visiting my parents a few weeks ago, and I have, every year our art teacher would have us make a portrait, I believe in the beginning and at the end of the year, or one or the other, throughout the course of elementary school. And I loved doing it and having all of those from, I believe, kindergarten through fourth grade. But that year in particular stuck out to me because for me, I was a bit taller than most of the people in my class. And I kind of like viewed myself in that way. And like, I thought that I had like very like large, long limbs. And so I was really thrown when he said that to me. I was like, what do you mean that's wrong? Like, this is how I view myself. Like, that's not wrong at all. What is right or wrong about that? So I just feel like that memory really stuck out for me. A, in general, those portraits, making all of them, I remember, but that one in particular, I thought was really important because I was like, there is no wrong in art making. So if that's how I view myself, then that's correct.
This is interesting to me because in second grade, you had this knowing there is no wrong in art making. What do you know why you had that knowing so young? Because that's often an age where people feel like there's a right way and a wrong way to make art.
Yeah, I feel that in each subject, I felt that there started to become like a right and a wrong. So in math, it's like, well, no, 2 + 2 does not equal 5. It equals 4. okay, learning that. Whereas, and same thing with science and history, that there are facts and this is how you get to said facts. But with art, I felt that, and it's probably a credit to my teachers, that there never was a wrong way. I never had a teacher come up to me and say, that's wrong. If I went up to a teacher like, hey, I'm struggling with this part, what do you suggest? They might be like, try this color combination, or maybe try that medium. There was never a, no, this is bad, or no, this is wrong. So I feel that it really is in credit to those that taught me that there isn't a right and a wrong.
Did you get a lot of recognition from teachers from elementary school and following like through middle school, high school?
Yeah, the earliest recognition, I guess, from a teacher that I can recall now is in middle school. We did these drawings of flowers, and I don't even know if I still have that piece, but I remember vividly, like, it was like 5 or 6 flowers, and I just, you know, drew them from still life / combination of how I was interpreting them. And I showed my teacher, and she's like, wow, your sense of color theory is really strong. And I was like, what? I was probably like, middle school, probably like 12, 13. And I was like, all right, I don't know what that is, but cool. But like little moments like that of encouragement, you know, really gave me the confidence to explore beyond what I felt like others expected in terms of art. So really being able to play with color and play with form and, you know, put my view of how I perceive the world into my work at a young age was really wonderful. And I was definitely fortunate with all of my art teachers growing up that they never were negative or discouraging.
And did you know that art was your path?
I didn't know until 6th grade. Are you 12 in 6th grade? I remember, so in our school you were able to take some high school level classes in middle school, one of them being studio art, and you had to apply to it. And I remember one of the drawings I was making, it was of a dog wrapped in an American flag. I found a photo and I thought that the colors were really pretty. And I was making that drawing, and my mom was sitting over my shoulder on the sofa, and I was like on the floor drawing. And my mom actually mentioned to me, she was like, would you ever consider doing art as a career path? And wow. I was like, I don't know. A, I didn't know what that meant. And B, I was like, no. I was like, I love how my Uncle David, he's an attorney. I love how, like, you know, he can buy me nice things. Lawyer, that sounds pretty good. And my mom was just like, what? She's like, no, you, she's like, obviously do what makes you happy, but that should come first. Whatever makes you happy, that's what you should do in life. Don't do something because of a monetary gain. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. So after that, I really started to consider art more seriously as a career path. So I didn't know like what type of artist I wanted to become, but I knew that art was the most interesting thing.
Okay, there are a couple interesting things about what you just said. One, it is rare that I interview someone where they receive that level of support. Like, they may get encouragement from their parents, but to have the mom, have your mom be the one to say, hey, have you considered art as a career? That does not happen very often. So that's pretty incredible. The thing that stands out too for me with that is that at 12, did you already have an idea that artists don't make money?
Yeah, I feel, because when I was in a lot of my classes, and then I think more seriously in high school, when I decided I wanted to be an artist, a lot of other students and a lot of teachers that I had in other subjects like math and science, they were like, why on earth are you wasting your intelligence on art? So I was, you know, lucky enough to be able to do well and exceed in the school system that we have in America. So a lot of my science and math teachers were like, what are you doing? Become a mathematician, become a scientist. Like, you're going to be broke as an artist. And twofold there. For one, I realized, I'd say around like 14, 15, early high school, mid high school, that I enjoyed being good at a subject. So like, I liked that I was good at math, and I liked that I was good at science or history or what have you, but I didn't enjoy it when I didn't succeed at it. And in art, it didn't matter. Like, if I made a piece and it was terrible, it was fine. I can make another one. And I loved making, and I love making that piece and that process, even if it didn't turn out well. So for me, that was an important differentiator. And then in the other breath, my parents were very supportive in the fact that they were like, you will figure it out. Whatever that means as an adult, you will figure it out. If this is what you love to do, it will be hard, but every profession and every job is not easy. Like, especially like as you're rising through the ranks and you're learning about yourself in whatever subject matter your professional career takes you, like it won't be easy. So you have to hold on to something that you love. So
very wise. Very, very wise. So you went from making art in high school, elementary school, middle school, high school, and really starting to be recognized as early as middle school for your understanding of color and for your ability as an artist. When you were deciding what to do as you left high school, how did you figure out that you wanted to then follow art?
I knew I wanted to apply to a university that wasn't specifically an art school. That way I could befriend people that studied other fields, because I thought that was important. I also didn't know what I wanted to do exactly. I knew that I didn't want to go to school and major in painting, or go to school and major in illustration, or major in sculpture, because I didn't want to have my studies be defined by a type of medium. So at the time, graphic design really stuck out to me. The learning of typography and composition and being able to leverage different types of media to tell a story, I thought was really intriguing. So I applied to mainly graphic design programs.
One thing that you just said, Amber, was you didn't want to just go to art school because you wanted to befriend people that studied other fields. Why was that so important? Why is that so important, do you think, to you?
For me, the ability to have different perspectives was very important. Obviously, you would get that in art school with people coming from all over the world, but the idea that I had friends or interacted with people that didn't study art and had a different way of thinking, I just felt that could only benefit me in the way that I view the world. So
that's amazing that you knew that.
Like, oh, you were pretty smart for an 18-year-old. Like, you were still sassy, but you know, you had your moments.
Yeah. No, it's also, it seems like a lot of times art students is like on college campuses and in places will congregate together and become their own little,
I definitely did that too, especially because I remember I went to Boston University's College of Fine Arts. I remember specifically requesting not to be put on the art floor. I was like, this is how I'm going to obviously meet art students, because I'm going to be in art class.
And then what was that shift for you from, okay, this is graphic design, I don't want to pick a particular type of like one form, one medium. And then you really started to narrow down into illustration and to the art that you make now. What started that shift for you?
So at BU, their program at the time, the first 2 years, you don't really even get into design and design thinking. It's very heavy in drawing and painting, sculpture, and printmaking. And I think that was very informative to me as a designer and then as an illustrator. So going into year three of college and starting design and thinking and about typography and the grid and composition, but then having this heavy background of similar thinking but applied to different types of media, really informed my design style. It was definitely more illustrative and loose, and definitely broke some of the concepts of like what design is. So I think that influence in school made me a more illustrative designer. And then once I graduated and didn't have to kind of fit within a curriculum, into an illustrator.
And did you feel, while you were having to fit into a curriculum, did you feel held back at all, or were you just experimenting within that curriculum?
I didn't feel limited. I feel that sometimes I definitely struggle, because I was like, this is remember thinking, this is the only time for a while where I have all of these resources. Like, I have a sculpture studio and a painting studio and a really amazing printmaking studio. Like, let me just experiment and see what happens. And I feel that some of my professors were super supportive of that. And then others were like, well, you need to be able to market yourself and get a job. And I'm like, yeah, I do freelance on the side. That will get me like my first job. It's fine. But I want to start to figure out who I am now while I have all of these resources at my disposal before I graduate and then not have all of them. So
one of the things that you said, Amber, was you were talking about what your favorite piece is. It could have been a little while ago, so it may have changed, but you said your favorite piece is Plant Goals, as it was the first piece I allowed myself to put out there in the style I was most afraid of sharing for years. So first of all, is that still, would you say that that's true?
Yeah, I would say, because I have it framed above my kitchen / work table. Yeah, that was one of the first finished pieces that I put out that really leveraged and leaned into elements of depicting women and figures that I've had for years in my sketchbook. And I was just kind of a bit too nervous to share, just because so many years had gone by since I've properly illustrated and put it out there in the world from school. So that's definitely my favorite for nostalgia's sake.
When you put that one out after having all the drawings in your sketchbook and not having put out that like illustration in so long, what was the response?
Oh, quick recap of my life post-college. My first job outside of college, I was a web designer at Victoria's Secret for about a year and a half.
And then, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll come back to a little bit considering the direction that your work has gone in. Yeah.
Yeah. Then I was a designer / art director at VaynerMedia for 2.5 years. And at that point, working at an agency, I really lost a lot of time and was like emotionally exhausted and, you know, physically not able to draw just with like agency hours in life. And I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to continue illustrating and drawing, whatever that means. I didn't even know what that meant at the time, but I wasn't able to do it. So I pivoted hard and I found a design job at Avon. They're a pretty old school beauty company, but their hours for designers were 9 to 5. I'm like, what? This is unheard of. So I really took advantage of that time I got back to really start heavily, you know, forcing myself to put that illustration work out there for the first time in a long time. When I put it on Instagram, I probably had like a couple hundred followers, which were all my friends. But I knew at that point too that I wanted to leverage Instagram as a platform to start putting my work out there and connecting with other illustrators and eventually finding, you know, more streamlined professional freelance work, not just, you know, the odds and ends that I've been doing while also working full time. And the response was really positive. All of my friends that followed me, they were like, oh my God, Amber, this is incredible. Like, where has this been? I'm like, buried in my sketchbooks. Having friends that were incredibly supportive kind of also helped me, you know, continue to make in this style and evolve and experiment. So,
yeah. It seems like you had a real business head, like in addition to being this artist, because you knew from the beginning, even when you had just a couple hundred followers, that you wanted to leverage Instagram to meet other illustrators, to make connections, to share your work. You knew in college or in art school when your professor was like, well, you got to choose this to be able to get a job and make a living. You're like, oh, it's cool. I'll be freelancing and be able to support myself. That's not something that is very common among artists to be thinking that way so early on and so consistently. Was that something that you consciously chose to do? Was that just a part of who you are?
For the part when I was graduating and like leveraging my freelance work to get my first job, that I just did some research and I was like, to get a job at like a company or an agency in New York City, they normally like to see work that you've done professionally. So I knew alongside my, you know, experimental work in college that I wanted to do a few freelance projects and use that portfolio to get me work. So that was research based. And then for leveraging Instagram, I was fortunate enough. VaynerMedia is a social media ad agency. So even though it was tough working there, just, you know, hours and working on various projects that weren't the most inspiring creatively, learning how to leverage a platform to build a brand, if you will, that knowledge I was able to kind of take and translate into building myself as an artist. So I was pretty fortunate that that was kind of taught to me in a way.
Yeah. And it's true. Working for VaynerMedia, I mean, Gary Vaynerchuk, it's like, you can't really learn from anyone more knowledgeable about.
Which is funny because back when I first took that job, my friend Jessica, we're really good friends from college. I had no idea who he was. I was like, okay, cool. This sounds fun. I was like, yeah. And then like the work that she worked on was like fun and kind of loose. But over the years that I worked there, that company grew immensely and his fame grew immensely. So it went from me being like, yeah, VaynerMedia, the social ad agency. And they're like, you know, Gary.
Totally. So
wild to see that happen in just the span of a few years of like how Vayner and Gary has gotten to be so well known. So yes, it was really wonderful to be able to learn from Gary and then from people that he'd hired that had also worked there for years by the time I got there, and how to leverage different platforms. And Instagram just felt the most natural to me, being an image maker, and Instagram being an image-based platform. So
that's a pretty awesome education. And then like having worked there and at this point, you know, having done whatever, all the things that you have done to put yourself out there, is there something that you feel made a bigger difference than other things starting out? And I'm just thinking of a person who is starting to get their art out into the world and starting to share it via social media. If there were particular things that you feel make a bigger difference than others.
Yeah. When I first started putting my work out there, I started to also reach out to different art directors, just finding them through Instagram and then kind of guessing their email cadence at whatever company for. The first project that I got, client-based project, was with Man Repeller. And I remember at the time I had these like cute illustrated New York City pins and I was just giving them away to people that lived in New York City. And I guessed Leandra's email at Man Repeller. And her assistant got back to me and was like, oh, we love these pins. Like, oh, that's so nice of you. You know, please send them. And then I followed up. It's like, hey, do you need anyone to illustrate some of your content? And they're like, oh, actually, yeah, we'll connect you with Emily. She runs all of our creative. So leveraging that was super important. And then in terms of growing a following on Instagram, I would say the most beneficial things that I've done were reaching out to different publications and being interviewed by them and then having them share my work on their platform and having their followers come over to my page and follow me. That always seems to kind of like take leaps and bounds in terms of following an audience. And then also working with brands like Man Repeller that also showcase your work on their website because they commissioned you for a piece for an article, having people find your name and your handle that way. And then also going to your page and following you. So those two tactics are definitely have like the biggest growth. But in between that, just finding other illustrators that you admire, reaching out to them, be like, hey, I really love your style. Even if it's completely different than your own style, just kind of like building friendships in that way, definitely helpful.
And that's a really important point because a lot of times people think like, oh, it's when I get big enough that those publications will come and ask me to be interviewed or those companies will come and seek me out, as opposed to you just basically cold calling and yeah, saying, hey, here's my, you know, here's some pins I make. And oh, by the way, do you need someone to
help?
Yeah. So I think that it's just important. I actually was just talking with a friend the other day who was asking me about the podcast and she said, oh, you have some really big names. Like, how do you get them? And I said, I just ask. Like, it's, yeah, it's really easy. And some people say yes, and some people say no. And that's just how it is.
That's exactly my philosophy. And it's interesting because when I started off wanting to find professional work as an illustrator, the traditional route is to have an agent, which is tough financially because they do take a huge percentage. But it's also tough because a lot of these agencies don't want to take people on until they've become successful. So you're like, wait, where's the, how do I enter that circle? So I just realized, screw that. Like, I'm just going to build my own audience and then find my own people. And it's interesting now because a lot of people think that people come to me for work, and there are surprising emails I'll get like, hey, we want to commission you for a project, like some really big brands. I'm like, oh, yes, oh my God, how'd you find me? But I'd say 95% of the work that I do is me having reached out to them or interviews that I get. So
yeah, very, very important. Yeah.
A lot of people are afraid to reach out. I'm like, what's the worst case scenario? They say no, or they don't respond. Like, meh. All the yeses outweigh that negative. So it's definitely worth it.
That's right. That's right. And okay, so I want to start getting into your work and the type of illustrations that you make and where it comes from. So I'll start by quoting something that you said. And you said, this ideal female is something my artwork aims to break, and several of my pieces focus on femininity and the female form, leveraging physical traits such as body hair, overtly extended limbs, and rounded features. So what is it? Like, what is the story there that had you say, I want to create a different female form than the one we see everywhere? And this is where I want to link it back to like, working for Victoria's Secrets, where it's, I mean, where is that connection? Because talk about ideal female form.
Yeah. So that's definitely a part of it. So there, it's, I think it's like a culmination of a few or several experiences that I've had and then experiences that other women have had that they've shared with me. One of them being studying art and going to different museums and art galleries, seeing a woman perceived by a man. Every time I would see that piece, I was like, I don't really know. Like, that's a beautiful piece of art, but like, that's either like because she commissioned him because she's a queen or royalty, or like, that's very sexual. Like, why are we falling into, or very matronly? Like, why are we falling into these three buckets, and why are we being perceived in that way? Like, women are so much more than that. Also, why are there no female artists in any major museums? I think it's like, you know, like a very small percentage.
Yeah, it's like 3% or something.
That's why I say none, even though I know that's symbolic. But it feels like none. So that's definitely one aspect of it. The other, in terms of advertising, Victoria's Secret definitely comes into play. I feel that, you know, looking at women that are, you know, size 0 or size 2, are, you know, 5'11", 6 feet tall, are Caucasian, all mostly have blonde hair that's very long. seeing that on a day-to-day basis and seeing how, you know, limited brands, who was, I would say, more male-dominated than female-dominated, even though my memory is kind of foggy. It's been a few years. But seeing how they leverage that specific type of woman and be like, hey, you want to look like this? Buy our stuff. Like, buy our bras, buy our underwear. Like, wear a push-up bra. It didn't resonate with me. And even though I loved working there because all the people I worked with are really wonderful, that sentiment of having to look a certain way and to buy into a product to look a specific way didn't resonate with me. I was like, well, what's wrong with buying underwear because you need underwear and, you know, make it's comfortable. Like, I don't need to buy that lacy thong with like red and pink polka dots because is like, I just want to buy it because it's cute. You know what I mean? So I, all this advertising, and it's not just Victoria's Secret. There are an onslaught of like high-end fashion brands and, you know, mass media fashion brands that are like, hey, you should want to look like this. And I feel like that definitely takes a toll on someone's self-esteem, especially when they're not seeing themselves in that advertising. So for me, a combo of that and in the art world, finding similar sentiments, I'm like, I want to put work out there that when women look at it, they're like, oh, that reminds me of myself. That I thought was really important because I'm like, if I'm not seeing myself in advertising and I'm Caucasian and I'm tall and I have long, light, brownish, blonde hair, like I'm close-ish to like this weird ideal. And if I'm feeling insecure about myself, like everyone must be. So that was something that I thought was really important, something that resonated with me and started to find its way within my work.
It's okay. So you say for women to look at your work and say, oh, that reminds me of myself. And yet your illustrations are often like the women are, unlike the norm where proportions are out of whack because it's like the Barbie style figure, but these, the proportions are maybe the legs are really big or they're, the shapes take on a more, almost sometimes like monstrous looking. Like there's almost that aspect to that. So where does that connect? That sense of, I want to see myself when I look at your illustrations, and your illustrations are, have this different aspect of the female form that I may not even relate to.
The reason why I tend to exaggerate form in a way is I take, when I look at a woman and I'm being inspired by her or several women and putting those in my drawings, it's more of her essence as well. So there definitely is a physicality to it. But for me, it's saying like, it's okay if your legs are much longer than your arms in regards to what society views as an acceptable proportion. So I just push that even further. Like, this is the beautiful element of that figure. And really pushing and pulling and exaggerating is important for me because it's saying that this element that society normally doesn't view as beautiful for a woman is beautiful. And that's why I'm giving it prominence, if that makes any sense.
It does. When you first started to put that out there, like, were you afraid to put the images out there? Were you excited? What was the initial feeling around it?
A combination. And it's interesting because I just did a podcast with Chasing Fashion, and she asked me, she's like, what's one question you wish people would ask? And this is it. It is, I feel that everyone that I do get interviewed by, the assumption is my work is so overwhelmingly accepted, which it is. And I think that's super important, but I definitely get a lot of commentary about like, why are you drawing her with body hair? Like, why does she have like, you know, pubic hair? Why does she look like this? Or why does she look like that? Like, that's not normal. Like, ew, like that's ugly. And I'm like, no, I'm trying to change your perception. Like, see all of these people that relate to it. Like, well, I'm trying to expand the idea of what beauty is beyond what society has told us it was. So I was definitely nervous because having to have a, you know, it's important to have those conversations. And that's why I leverage bright colors and really like fun, quippy titles or like humorous stories into my work to kind of bring in that person that is initially a naysayer and have that conversation with them. So that's exciting, but that's also terrifying because you want to defend the fact that beauty is so much more than what, you know, society tells us it is, but not do it in a way where that person, you know, becomes hostile towards you. So it's like this interesting balance of, you know, finding out A, who trolls are, and B, you know, the people that are honestly, you know, open to having their mind changed, but are a bit hesitant, like having that conversation with them.
And how have those conversations, like, give me an example of how a conversation like that might go. If somebody comes to you, is like in conversation with you where they feel like, dude, what, why are you drawing them like this? Like, what is the deal? And they're unknowingly often, like, I think we're unconscious to how much we take in these ideas of beauty and how much they affect our own perceptions of ourselves and of beauty in others. And so a person may come to you completely unconscious of what they're carrying around beauty. How does a conversation like that go for you?
A good example was maybe it was a year ago now. I made a piece of a figure and a follower commented, he was like, can she even do like one sit up? And before I even saw the comment, there's like five other people being like, what are you trying to say? And so I commented back, I was like, hey, like, I'm not too sure what you mean. Can you clarify? And he was like, well, I mean, she's bigger. Like, she should at least be able to do like a push up or something. Like, come on. And I was like, I don't know if you understand like what I'm trying to do here. And then
I kind of explained, you know, the idea of like societal beauty and like these unrealistic expectations that, you know, women feel like they have to live up to. And he was like, oh, I'm really sorry. So he messaged me and he's like, I'm really sorry. He's like, I thought that your work was editorial. And I was like, it is editorial, but I'm not too sure if your definition of editorial is accurate. And he's like, well, more like satirical. And I was like, some pieces that are self-portraits definitely have humor in them, but it's to create conversations like this. It's like editorial just really means like it's a work in a publication. I was like, there's no, you know, some of those editorial works can be sarcastic. I was like, but my work normally is not. And he greatly apologized. And he's like, wow, like I didn't realize, like, you know, especially seeing all the comments. And then he was like, can you delete my comments? And I was like, no. And I was like, I mean, you can do that yourself. But I was like, no, I was like, you know, I think like, you know, you have to be careful about what you say on the internet because it lives on forever. So I was like, but I'm glad that we were able to have this conversation and to kind of like, you know, show you like, this is why I make what I make. Like, yes, the colors are fun and beautiful and engaging. And sometimes the stories are a bit humorous, but it is very serious. And I used that as a tool to talk about the more serious aspects of my work. So that was a really good example.
Yeah.
It was a little funny at the end, can you delete my comments? And I was like, you can delete those yourself if you feel like you need to. But yeah.
And that's interesting too, right? Can you delete the comment? It's like, that says a lot right there. Whether, I mean, who knows why he was asking that? There's a lot of different possible reasons, but just what you said, like actually once you say something, like pay attention to what you're saying, because once you say it, it's out there. And in the case of the internet, it could be out there forever. So to have that kind of conversation publicly is really valuable. That level of being able to educate through art in that way. Do you have a lot of those kind of conversations? Do you see some change happening in response to your art?
I would say that in the beginning, more so than now, I feel that a lot of people are very celebratory of the figures that I depict. They're like, wow, like how beautiful, or like how interesting, or like, I just love that, you know, you're depicting more than what society depicts in regards to women. So I would definitely say there has been a change. And then also in the clientele that I work with as well, like being able to start working with more higher end fashion brands, which are notorious for sending models down the runway that are size zero, Caucasian, blonde, and 6 feet tall. Starting to create figures that fall outside of that realm that they're used to is a great start and push in the direction that, you know, the depiction of women societally needs to be pushed in.
Yeah, it does. And so one of the things though is like you said, you know, it's changing that it had, your art had more of an impact as far as just kind of waking people up earlier on. And now it's a little more celebratory. And yet, like, I think it was a few days ago on your Instagram, you had this illustration and you said, it was about being a woman artist. And you said, tired of having to phrase my thoughts in order not to offend the man. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about where that came from.
I feel that a lot of times, and I'm very fortunate that it doesn't happen often. I know that's not the case for a lot of other women in the arts, but having to, especially when it comes down to like contractual work and, you know, working out like rates and percentages of sales and things like that, or things in the contract that were snuck in there that shouldn't have been, for me, it would be lovely to just be like, hey, this contract isn't working out for me because X, Y, and Z were put in there and we never discussed it. And that's something I don't feel comfortable with. So, you know, if I have to change half the contract, I'm going to walk away. Like, that'd be something that I would love to say. But I know that based off previous experiences, there will definitely be some weird form of retaliation or emotion put into it. So I just, I'm like, hey, you know, at this time, like, I'm just going to pass. I have so many other offers. Thank you for your time. The reason why I say the man instead of like men is because it kind of has that like double meaning, or it's not just me that's dealing with this. Like, I know so many women that have to feel like they have to tiptoe around what they say when they're with men in order to like not offend them or not make them feel less masculine in a way. It's just, it's exhausting because you're like, I wish I could just kind of say it to you straight, like, hey, this contract is shit. I'm not signing it. And I'm not going to work with someone that puts that in front of me and thinks that that's okay. You know, unfortunately, women are not afforded that ability to be able to do that without some form of retaliation.
Right. I was going to ask you, because you say based on past experience, like, what is something that has happened where you're like, oh, all right, that's, can't just say what I'm thinking here.
I was potentially working with someone that was interested in selling my art. And every time I'd be like, hey, no, that's not what my artwork is about. Or no, you know, that's something that I'm not comfortable with. They'd be like, well, why? Like, you know, like, you should be open to learning. And I'm like, I don't know. It just would always be like this weird hostile response, even if, or like passive aggressively hostile, if that makes sense. Like, on surface, if someone's reading your interaction, they're like, oh, well, that could go either way. But it's like, yeah, it shouldn't go either way. Like, why are you responding to me in a way that's making it like I don't know anything? So if that makes sense. I know, like, it's.
Well, and I wonder too, like, if you think age has something to do with it. I mean, you're a young artist and you're a woman artist. I mean, you can't know in the sense that you can't be like an older person and be like, oh yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel that as I've gotten older, the thing with age has gotten less overt. So definitely when I was younger, I've had a lot of men that I've worked for being like, you're too ambitious. Like, you need to calm it down. Like, you're young, you have no idea. I'm like, if I were a dude, you would not have just said that to me. Mm-hmm. That's actually a really great example. The one that I mentioned before was definitely a little more newer and a little more nuanced, but I feel that it's easier for men to be more forward and more direct, especially in like climbing up whatever ranks they're climbing up. And for me personally, doing that and following that suit, I get slapped on the hand. So, it's just like a culmination of like more overt experiences like that. And then more passive experiences, like the more recent one that I've had where I'm like, wow, women are not given that privilege to just be straight with how they are thinking in regards to business.
And what about, like, do you ever feel from women any kind of backlash in response to your work?
Some women have commented, not in regards to the figures, but in regards to my style. They're like, oh, it looks like a 5-year-old did that. And I'm like, oh, well, thank you. Because, you know, young people view the world much more open than as you grow older. So I do take that as a compliment. But other than that, I haven't, not overtly and not recently, no.
Okay.
I feel like after this conversation, like, wait, yes. But yeah, I'm not thinking of anything right now.
Let's move into then that, like, as your work is now more easily accepted and you're getting more success with your work, is there a way that you feel like you want to shift things a little to keep the conversation dynamic, or you feeling good about where things are at with the way your art's being received?
I'm always like honored when people positively receive my work and, you know, commission me, especially brands that I would have not expected to commission me to make work. In terms of pivoting or being more dynamic, I'm definitely experimenting more with the idea of doing fully digital pieces. So my work, most people know my work as like a drawing that is done half digitally and then half by hand and then scanned back in. I'm experimenting more with this idea of digitally painting, just because actual oil painting would be tough for me to do in my apartment. I would eventually kill my boyfriend and I from like turpentine poisoning. So digitally painting, and then like acrylic painting I've done in my apartment too, but again, just in terms of spatial reasons, it's easier to do that on paper than canvas. But starting to put my work as paintings and having people view it not only as commercial but also as fine art more heavily than what I've been doing is something that's definitely interesting. That's been a new development in the last few weeks. I'm just starting to see how that goes, like, beyond being a commercial artist / illustrator. Like, what does my work look like if it were to be perceived as like a traditional type of fine art, but digitally? Because that's something that's also important to me, is kind of making art in the time period I live in, which is very much a digital age.
Did you learn when you were learning to make art, was it digital as well as print?
It was mostly analog. Digital obviously came into play, you know, when I did books and design projects, you know, leveraging the Adobe suite, but not until the latter end of like my college learning, because a lot of the time the professors wanted you to make things with your hands, you know, so you could kind of learn that process before delving into digital, which I think for me is important. Everyone has their own way of learning and their own process. But for me, I love that because now when I paint digitally, it's, you know, very much like how I would normally paint. And when I draw digitally or when I draw by hand, it's very similar. It's very fluid. I just think that digital is just a different way to express yourself than actual paint. So for me, it was helpful to learn analog first before digital. But I feel like as time goes on and, you know, artists are born now that are 20 in 20 years, it'll be interesting to see what works for them. But for me, it's nice to kind of have both.
And is there art that you put out now that scares you to put out?
Yeah, especially the digital painting. I was very nervous. I put one out and I was very nervous. I was like, oh man, I was like, I hope this doesn't like put me under. And my boyfriend was like, there's no way. It's just a natural evolution for you. Like you're experimenting, like you'll be fine. I'm like, thank you. But I recently just did a piece for New York Times Magazine that was 100% digitally painted. And it has so far been really well received, which is great. But it's something where I'm also starting to learn and like remind myself that it shouldn't matter if not everyone likes your work. Like not everyone is going to like your work, period, regardless of what you do. So don't hang yourself up on it. That's something that I'm still teaching myself daily and having other people remind me like, hey, when I'm in this rut, tell me that it's fine if I can't get myself out of it. And they're like, all right. So I feel that it's good to be scared, but I think that's easier said than done. So when I'm putting my work out there and I am scared, I try to remind myself that as long as it comes from my heart, that's what is important, regardless of how it's received in terms of like technical ability.
Well, and that's actually something else. Like as you get to be more and more successful, does it feel any trickier to keep that connection to your heart? I mean, and not be influenced by the response of the outside world, especially as more and more people see your art?
It definitely gets trickier. I think that it just takes a lot of, for me, I'm starting to realize now making work just for myself and work that I don't share with anyone is important, and then making like having that feeling with that personal work and then putting that into work that I do share with others, that helps me kind of avoid going down the spiral of like, will other people like this? Is this something that other people will find good? So it's more of like, this is what is important to me. This is what I think is strong for myself, and that's all that matters. So it's tough, but I'm trying to figure out ways where, you know, I can make work that still is connected to who I am and not worry too much about the negative, if there is any negative sentiment around it, and not let that affect me.
And now that like you've achieved the level of success that you have, and of course you're growing, and is this what you thought it would be? Like, when you thought of yourself as being a full-time artist, is this how you imagined it to be?
I think it's better than what I imagined it to be, which is awesome. For me, like working for myself has always been like a more like a further off dream. Like I'm not one to put like years on things because life happens. So I was like, oh yeah, you know, like in my 30s, I'll, you know, hopefully be in a position where I can freelance full time. And then that happened a lot faster than I thought it would. So it's been only 8 months since I've been freelancing full time, and not juggling a full time job and freelance, and I love it. So I hope it works out for the long haul, because the thought of going back to a full-time job kind of scares me a little bit. yeah, it's been really incredible.
And do you think that a lot of that is kind of what you said earlier, Amber, around putting yourself out there, and that in like 95% of the people that you ended up doing illustration work for and the companies that you were, was you putting yourself out there, you contacting them?
Definitely. Yeah. I feel that if I feel like there's this sentiment that, you know, artists feel like they have to wait for people to come to them so they don't, you know, appear to be, you know, too desperate's not the right word, but like, you know, too eager. And I'm like, to hell with that. Like, I don't care if I appear to be eager. I am. I love this. I want to put this out there. Like, and I've been lucky that no one views it that way, or if they do, they have not told me. So it's been a more of a positive response, because I feel like there's so much out there for people to find, to rely on other people to find you without putting yourself out there in front of them is tough. So you may as well just go for it. Worst case scenario is they say no, or they laugh at you, which is fine.
Yeah. And it's like you said, I mean, it's easier to say, okay, it's rejection and you just move on. And it's not that it doesn't necessarily even hurt, but that you keep going anyway.
That when people envision rejection, they envision, myself included, envision it to be this huge, terrible, negative thing. I would say every time that I get a no, it's like, hey, we love your work, just not a fit for our brand, or hey, this is really wonderful, we don't have a budget, or hey, like, thank you so much for this, like, we'll keep you in mind for the future, which 9 times out of 10, you're like, okay, I'll circle back with you in a few years, I guess. But yeah, like, when in terms of rejection, it's never that bad. It's normally less because of you, and more just because of, like, it's not a fit for a financial or aesthetic reason. So rejection, I would say that I've experienced, I'm lucky enough that it's not like, you suck. I've never gotten one of those. Like, your work is awful. Always just been like, eh, it's just not a fit for us. So,
right.
So having that lens, I think, is important. I tell a lot of people that, like, a lot of my friends that, like, want to become professional illustrators. And I was like, yeah, the no's are never really that bad. It's just kind of like, no. Or sometimes you just get a no, like, thanks, but no thanks. And you're like, okay, cool. Thank you for responding. Like, that was
right. Right. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
So, I think having that lens of rejection, of it not being like this catastrophic thing, is important. And every so often I'd find myself, like, slipping into, like, oh man, what if this huge brand says no? And, like, the likelihood of me hearing back from them then is slim. So it's fine. Yeah. It's helpful to, like, put yourself out there to know that the negative is really not that bad.
Yeah. And to keep going. I want to tie that into perfectionism, because that's something that you had commented on a little while back. You said, I realized most of my work began to strive for an unrealistic perfection, taking hours to ensure every line was exact. Allowing for more natural, noisy line work within my pieces feels more honest, not only to my themes of portraying women through a woman's lens, but also to myself as an artist. And what did it take for you to loosen up around your art?
That I think was a quote when I did it in my second interview with It's Nice That, which is really cool that they interviewed me again a year, almost a little more than a year later, when I was reflecting back on how my style evolved. I just have these memories of certain pieces where I would spend hours doing several different types of versions where, like, I think I had the digital part down, and then I printed out and I didn't, and then I had to go back to digital. And in my head, I'm like, no, this isn't perfect. Like, this isn't right. And then I remember stopping, being, what does that even mean? Why am I getting myself worked up? Like, what am I, like, go back to what you're trying to convey. Like, what is the story this piece is telling you that it wants to tell to other people? Like, live in that. Don't worry about if the line is, like, a little less, you know, like, straight than you initially intended. Maybe the line is supposed to be a bit more wiggly. Maybe that leans into the idea. So I realized that, you know, I shouldn't be overly stressing out about any of the work that I make. Like, if it's causing me negative sentiment, then it's probably because I'm trying for this weird perfection and trying to appeal to someone other than, you know, myself and the story that the piece is supposed to tell. So taking a step back and realizing that, you know, letting the line kind of tell the story is more important than trying to control the line.
Hmm. So, yeah. So it was mostly, yeah.
And then telling myself that every time I make a new drawing. So it's definitely easier said. Everyone's like, wow, that's so wonderful, you could do that. I'm like, yeah, it's not easy.
Right.
I try to tell myself that every time I make a new piece. So
every time you make a new piece, it's like, just let it tell its own story. Yeah. And when you say, like, let it tell its own story, it's like allowing the piece to just be its thing, like, to let go of control around it, basically.
Exactly. So like normally I'll pull inspiration from other women or more recently fashion brands and how I feel like in fashion, like the idea of aesthetic is being more loosely interpreted, which I love. Being inspired by that, but then kind of letting the, after that initial inspiration, kind of letting the piece kind of take over. A lot of times I'll start drawing without a specific idea in mind and just letting it happen. I do that less though for my pieces that don't start digitally because, you know, cost of paper is expensive, but in turn, that's why I love digital so much because you can just kind of let it flow and like change direction and pivot and then eventually come to an idea that feels strong and organic.
A couple more things here is like right now where you're at in your art and in your life. I mean, they obviously feed each other. What do you want to be saying at this point around the work that you're creating in terms of a message that you want to communicate?
The culmination of my work to this point, I think very much aims to do its best to tell the narrative that it's okay to be who you are, that you don't have to fit into any particular box or sphere or line that other people might say you have to, that there is not one definition of beauty. Perfection is an unreal concept that puts pressure on you to be someone that you're not. And as long as you stay true to yourself, like that's the most important thing I think that you can do.
And do you find that?
Tell myself.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you find that like making art like this and having that be the message has changed how you view yourself and how you view your body and your place as a woman?
Definitely. And I feel like I struggle with, you know, my appearance every so often. Like I definitely am like, oh man, like, I don't know. I think I gained some weight. Like I look funny here. And I'm like, what are you, why? You don't look funny. Like you're beautiful. You know, as long as you're, you know, healthy enough for your definition of healthy, that's all that matters. Like stop trying to fall, you know, prey to what other people tell you you should look like, which is really hard, especially, you know, even like, especially just, you know, existing and being out in the world and seeing adverts, you know, it's tough for me to, you know, always be 100% confident with myself. But I feel that making the work that I make helps me get through those tough times.
Yeah, that's so cool. One of the things that you had said in an interview was that when you grow up, you wanted to be a taller version of your grandmother. And I was just curious what it was about your grandmother. Why her?
She was always very true to her opinions. And a taller person just because I'm significantly taller.
Yeah, I figured.
So I was like, I don't want to shrink to her height because she had a grave difficulty as she got older, like reaching for things. So, you know, if I could stay my height, that would be pretty dope. But in terms of like her personality, she was very much comfortable with being direct and confident in herself. And that's something that I want to have as I grow older.
Well, it's clearly something you already have.
Thank you. Trying to keep that steady into my older years.
Yeah. I mean, it's why your art has stood out for so long. It's like you took a risk at a time. Like now maybe it's easier. Now maybe it's celebrated more, but you took a big risk putting out art where you said, hey, I'm a woman. I'm drawing illustrations, making pictures of women as a woman, and they don't look like the woman that you're used to seeing. And here you go. Like, let's see what happens.
Yeah. In a nutshell. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. This may be a random question. Well, it is a random question, but I wanted to know the answer because someone had asked you, there's two things. One, maybe not as random, but you said the best news you ever received was learning you had a baby brother, which maybe made me think like, did you not know you had a brother or was this like,
yeah, no. So like I was 2 years old and changed when my younger brother was born. And like the concept of a brother I got, cause I was like, my mom's stomach is bigger. And they said that a, you know, sibling is living in it. And like, they did a pretty good job of like explaining to me, you know, the creation of life
without getting too detailed at age two.
Cause I'd right.
like mortified. I'd be like, what?
So they did a very good job of that. But I remember, and the reason why I think it in part is the best news, because my brother is an amazing human being. But at age two, I remember the night he was born is one of my earliest memories, I think. I think, if not the earliest, one of them. And the night my brother was born, I, being the toddler I was, would always go into my parents' room being like, I want to sleep here. And they were very nice to let me do that, even though they slept in a very small bed. I walked into their room that night, and I walked to my mom's side of the bed, and she wasn't there, and I was like, weird. And then I walked to my dad's side of the bed, and he wasn't there, and I was like, really weird. And then I was like, and I remember being like, I feel like it's late. Like, it's not like they're still downstairs watching TV. So, like, I walk down the stairs, and I kind of, like, peer over the side of the stairs, and, like, my grandma was, like, pacing back and forth, which is very Italian. And I'm like, hey, grandma, like, where is mom and dad? And she's like, oh, they're at the hospital with your baby brother. And I was like, oh my God. It's like, A, excited, because it's like, cool. B, because it's like, okay, I'm not alone. Yeah, so I think it was like twofold. Like, in hindsight, definitely the best news because I love my brother. But at the time, also best news because I wasn't by myself in the condo. It's like a two-part good news.
For the immediate and the long term. It was like best news in both cases.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, this was the one that was pretty random, which is you had said a movie that you would watch on repeat for eternity was The Devil Wears Prada, and I was curious why you chose that one.
Yes, it's so good. I love Meryl Streep. And it's just, I don't know, I just love that movie. I feel like every time it's on, like, everyone I know on Twitter is like, The Devil Wears Prada is on Netflix or it's on HBO. I'm like, yes. I don't know, I love that movie. I, like, there's no specific reason as
to right.
why. I think it's mainly Meryl Streep.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
She's hilarious. So and it's always one of those like feel good movies that I could always watch and like not really get bored of.
Yeah, okay. I was wondering if there was anything. Right. Right. Before I go into the last part of this, the last question and last pieces of it, is there something that we haven't talked about that you want to?
No, you covered everything. This is awesome. I love this one. Oh, I like that from like beginning to present. It's very rare. I don't think I've done a podcast that does that.
All right. Well, then let me tell folks where to find Amber's work because you have to check it out. I mean, it's like, so like Amber said, you know, it's a lot of bright colors. And I mean, it's so cool. It's just so cool. I showed it to my daughter. She's 17. She immediately started following you on Instagram. And yeah, I was like, Am, you're going to love this art. She's like, oh, because she's really into art. And she's also very much into female form and changing things. And so you want to go, first of all, to Amber's website, which is ambervittoria.com. That's VITTORIA.com. And your Instagram handle is, I don't have it in front of
Amber
me.
_Vittoria.
Okay. Amber_Vittoria. And then I have a gratitude for you, which is I love how you're taking such a big issue, which has a lot of heaviness to it. You know, there's a lot of like pain and suffering and grief. And you're putting out into the world, and this is just who you are. Like I can tell just in the course of talking with you, you're putting out into the world in this way that is so much lighter and looser. And so it's not taking away from the seriousness of the issue at all. It's not denying or ignoring what women feel in terms of beauty and how we perceive ourselves and are perceived by others, but it's done in this way that you make it so inviting and you make it so people want to have the conversation with you or they want to have the conversation with others around your art. And I don't think it's just that you use these bright colors. I think it's who you are. I feel like in the course of this conversation, like that's how you show up in the world is like, okay, I'm going to deal with the hard stuff and we're going to laugh and we're going to like do it in a way that welcomes you and invites you into the conversation and keeps it light and loving. And I love that. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Oh, I'm so glad. That's my intention. I'm like, I hope this comes through. That's so good to hear that it does. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it comes through in your art and it just comes through in who you are and how you are. And then the last question is for the artist who feels like, okay, I want to be true to myself. And to be true to myself is to put out art that may be controversial. It may be really poorly received or people may be upset by it. What would you say to that person in terms to have them, to help them along this path of staying both true to themselves and recognizing that, yeah, it is risky and it is scary?
I feel that if the work that you make comes from an honest, vulnerable place, then it's okay. That not everyone is going to like your work. That's impossible. You're not going to have work that everyone loves, regardless if you're an artist or in another field. That as long as the work that you're making is honest to you and isn't offensive in regards to other people and isn't negative or putting other people down, I think that just put it out there and see what happens.
All right. That's great. Thank you so much, Amber.
Thank you. That was awesome. Oh my God. Favorite podcast ever.
I'm Daphne Cohn, and you've been listening to the Creativity Habit podcast. For more conversations with brave and experimental artists, head on over to thecreativityhabit.com. You can follow The Creativity Habit on Instagram. You can support the podcast and the artists on it by going to iTunes Podcast and subscribe, rate, and reviewing the podcast. To review, you actually have to get on your laptop and subscribe to the podcast. The more reviews, the more folks know about all these incredible artists and makers doing such beautiful work in the world. So thank you for taking a couple minutes of your time to share your thought over at iTunes. Join me next week for another Creativity Habit podcast. And thank you for listening. Dun, dun. Ooh, dun, dun. The sunshine.